Welcome to the Unlimited Creative Owning Your Uniness podcast. I'm your host, Renee Kitson, and we'll be having a blast today. Definitely like, share, comment, whatever you can do to appreciate this podcast. Whichever platform you're on, just do so, because without your support, you know, we can't do it. So for this session, we'll be talking about creative passion within entrepreneurship. Our guest for today is Yvonne Walters. Let me tell you something. This individual was meant to be an entrepreneur. She is creative. She's dynamic. And if I should roll out some of her titles, it would be like this. Creative social entrepreneur, director and producer, and CEO or manager of Art Tribute Performing Arts. And most of all, she's a Chevening scholar, where it is that she went to Goldsmith to study creative and cultural entrepreneurship and has an MA in that area. But most of all, that's just it. It's not about her title, but more along the line of her attitude. When I tell you that she is passionate, she is passionate. So today, just listen on in as she talks about the type of attitude that you need to bring to the table or bring yourself within spaces when it comes to entrepreneurship. Thank you so much, Yvonne Walters, for being here with us today. I am so grateful. Like, I'm just like in awe. I'm just so appreciative of you being here with me. So usually when we start off a session, we do two things. We ask two questions, or rather I ask two questions. The first one is, how would you define yourself? How would you introduce yourself to anyone? What would you say?
Oh, wow. That's such a loaded one, because there's so many sides to me. I would first say, not even first, there's no particular order. I would say I'm creative. I say I'm very spiritual, dynamic, autonomous. So those are some of those, very supportive, and I am a nurturer as well. So I use those words to describe myself.
And I love that, because then you aren't necessarily looking at describing yourself as like a title of saying like, I'm solely an educator, or I am solely an entrepreneur, or I'm solely like a Chevening scholar. You didn't go that length.
No, those are pieces. Those are pieces of me, like so much range to who I am. I am those too, but just so many different things. Yeah.
And I love it, because then that means that your process in defining your essence or your level of creativity isn't necessarily about like the supposedly conventional approaches of what value is or what is deemed to be good. So it feels like when you define yourself in that manner, that you're coming from a place of like heart. That's what I got.
And that's the truth. The truth is, my creative process is just what brings me joy. Like, it is what makes me feel aligned. That's what I get up and I do. That's my creative process. That's the best way, that's the simplest way I can put it.
You just said that your creative process is getting up and do. Wow. Like, that's an action word. Point blank, period. And I love it. You get up and you do. So before you get up and do, or possibly in the process of doing, is there a song that puts you in the mood to create?
Oh, there's so many different things that makes me create. I'm visual, firstly. So I would say is, I see things, I see movements, people, a moment, and I go, ah. You know, it's normally visual stuff that sparks me. Also, yes, I would say sound effects. But I wouldn't say like I have a particular song that gets me in the zone. I wouldn't say that. What would get me in the zone to create as well is strategy. Like, I would see something. Yes, as weird as it is, I do love me some strategies. So I realize like, yeah, I see something missing, and then my mind just start going strategy, boom, let's create. I don't know, I'm weird like that. Like,
what you're saying to me is that you see an issue in front of you and you're thinking of how it is that you can solve that issue by putting an action plan in place.
Yeah, and that's how I create.
That's how you create?
That's like literally, that's how I create. Literally.
Okay, that's that. I've never heard of that before. Like, I'm not gonna lie, that's immensely interesting. So like, talk to me about like how you got into the arts. I might have an understanding because I saw you on campus when we went to mm-hmm. college together. But like, how did you get into the arts? Where did it begin for you?
So this is one of those questions that I always wish I had this amazing answer to. But I feel very cliche because I'm going to say the cliche answer. In high school, like so many of us, you're in high school, you join the drama club, and then you go, oh. But as when I was younger, though, I used to watch ETV and watch all these celebrities and be like, oh, wow, that looks so fab. But really and truly, when I was joining my drama club in high school at Holy Childhood, that's how I got into it. I was still very timid. Wasn't certain if that was for me, but really felt a connection. And then I went to Edna Manley and then started to somewhat try and find the identity of who I am as a creative. Because even at that stage, I honestly don't think I understood then who I was as a creative. I was exploring still in those 4 years.
Wow. So when you say exploration, like at what point did you recognize that like I'm not here as yet? I'm not there.
Oh. I wouldn't use the word I'm not there yet because I think I had to explore to understand who I am. And it's also how our theater industry is set up in Jamaica that you think you're supposed to be an actor. How is it that you're in theater and not acting? So at that time I thought I was to be an actor. But I realized it took me gut and confidence and honesty in self to say, I don't like acting. I appreciate it. I even teach it. I love the craft of it. For me to get up every single day and be an actor, I like it. But I realized a little bit after that I see images. And then I realized, I'm a director. And I realized I like directing class. And I realized I actually like writing. I like playwriting. I don't do it a lot or I don't do it fully because it takes a lot of energy out of me to do that. But I realized after that, I am actually a director. I like putting things together. And then further growing and developing and from the support of my dad, I realized I'm actually an entrepreneur. I like to birth ideas. I like to strategize and come up with new things. So it took me a while to get into it. And this is about like 26, 27. I started to put it all together. That's why I said exploring was so important. The process to where I am today, you know, I'm so grateful for it. But that's who I am, where I am now.
Okay. So like, let's get a bit deeper into the part where you said that in connecting to your father, you recognize that you're an entrepreneur and in some ways was merging that within your creative process of being drama oriented.
So my dad has always been very supportive. Like, you should be an entrepreneur. You should have your own business, be very independent. And I don't know if he realized that was my personality or that was just his goal for his daughter. We haven't had that conversation. Maybe we should one day. But he was very right because that is my personality. I am an entrepreneur. Like, I like working on my time. I actually like hiring people. I like paying people. Payday makes me happy. Like, really working on salaries makes me happy. So he was the one who encouraged even the business, and he was the one who talked to me about arts education. At the time, we didn't even know fully what it was, or the level, the potential it could be at the time years ago. But he was the one who said, hey, why not say some literature books, you know, and put it on stage for students? And I was like, No. Let me try the media, radio. I'm gonna do that. And years later, I realized, yeah, he was right. Yeah, he knew me. He knew far more what I needed than I did. So let's just jump into this and let's go ahead in.
Let me just tell you now, the tongue is a very powerful form of ministry. Words. So when he spoke over your life, he meant that. He meant it. So I just actually know.
And it's so interesting to an appearance, actually, genuinely. I think what I appreciate about my dad, and I'm going off a little bit in this moment, is how my dad, like, genuinely gets to know me. Because for him to hit the spot like that, it meant that, like, he took the years to get to know who this person is, for him to say, this, I think, is a path for you. And he was 100% right.
You're so right. Because, like, in him getting to observe and to know you and to then say to you, like, hey, you're my daughter and all, but really and truly, you're meant to be a leader, a risk taker. And some of those things is what people would define entrepreneurship to be. And how would you define the concept itself within just the experiences that you've had so far?
Oh, leading, risk-taking is definitely a part of it. We got to learn to take some punch too, you know? You're going to have a moment where you lay in your bed and you're between breathing and crying. When things right just down, don't.
Sorry.
Yeah, man. You're between breathing and crying because, you know, you're just doing both because that's all you can do in this present moment. I think one of the things that makes me work so well as an entrepreneur, and one of my, the company members said it to me, is how well I am at solving many issues one time, calmly. I don't know, sometimes like, I always reflect on myself after and I go, how did I just out five fire like that and not like panic? Interesting. So that's one of the things I think, an entrepreneur, you have to be able to solve problems as they come fiercely. If you need to cry, you know, but when you finish and you have the whole solving down pat, go hold your tears. Entrepreneurship also is, you have to be a visionary. I think you also have to be ready to revolutionize.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very important. You're going to have naysayers who say, you know, that's not possible. But if you're really and truly about to make changes in whatever form or shape, you just have to get ready to just do it and prove it. Is the proving going to take some time? It's, I think one thing with entrepreneurship as well is it's not an overnight thing. You know, a lot of persons have this concept that we're going to jump up our own business and rich and boss. You know, like how artists feel, boom, one song, everybody know we out there. No, it takes a while. It really does. So if you're willing to invest your time and energy in it as well, I think that is also how I would define entrepreneurship, is investment.
Investment. And when you say investment, what are you investing in? Is it that you invest in yourself, the people, the idea? How do you navigate that process of knowing when to invest and where to invest?
And that's such a good question, because we have to also know when not to invest, when we're investing too much. So first, let's go with what to invest. Investing your time, investing your time, your energy, your whatever resources you have. And we can talk about all our different capitals, because sometimes we think that we're just looking at financial capitals. There's so many different capitals, your social capital, your network, your investing, your symbolic capital, whatever, however you can signal and reputation you can build to use to invest in this company as well. That is also a part of the process. And the truth, for me, I don't know about other entrepreneurs, investing your love, investing your heart, investing your soul, investing a piece of yourself in this, like, every day. But we also have to learn when not to invest, when we're giving too much, when it's taking too much out of us, when we are burnt out, when we are drained, and we now have to realize, oh, we have to pull it back a little. Maybe we have to pause a little. Maybe we need more support from our social capital from our social circles, our network. And I think that is so important in conversation, that self-care conversations with entrepreneurs. It took me a minute to realize that for myself. So definitely I have to share that as well.
And so even as you have the one-man show of the supposedly glorification of the one-man show of being an entrepreneur, how do you navigate from you doing it all to then having a team?
And that's a very tricky thing. I think that's one of the hardest parts of entrepreneurship, especially a micro business when you're trying to scale. You know, you don't have the financial resources to be hiring people. And that's, it's, there's no cut and dry answer to that. Because even though I'm looking at that, one of the things that I learned, and I've been speaking to other young entrepreneurs, and as we share together, is sometimes hiring part-time staff. The truth is your business cannot hire persons full-time for the entire year. But maybe you have a high peak, let's say a March is your high peak season. So maybe for that month or for 6 weeks or for 8 weeks, you say, okay, I'm going to need a second for this time period. And you hire that person in. Also, when you come on to interns, take on interns, there are also persons who may be willing to volunteer, and you pull them in and you support them and maybe mentor them in other ways if you don't have that final resource as yet. And until, you know, once you have that final resource, you can take on as much staff as you can.
So we're going to rally back to the little part that I slipped in at the front where I said, like, okay, you're also a Chevening scholar. I don't know if you can flip your hair. And you know what? Humility suits you. I'm going to flip the hair for you. Congratulations all for finishing your master's from Goldsmith. But no, you're not even saying nothing about that, you know. But I'm just letting you know that you have put in the work and you've come forth, right, to reap the blessings, because it doesn't necessarily, as you said, regarding entrepreneurship, it don't necessarily just come out of thin air, but you had to do to actually show up. What was your experience like in the UK while studying and then move into talking about the difference in terms of the space of entrepreneurship based on what you observed while in the UK?
Okay, so first I wanted to say one of the reasons I decided to study, I realized as a creative, I wanted to gather more business knowledge and experience. So my master's is a creative and cultural entrepreneurship master's. And I believe that in order to grow my business, it was very important. And I think that we lack those skills in Jamaica. Not saying that they aren't persons with the skills, but you know, it's an area we can improve on. So I wanted to be one of those persons who come back with skills, backyard, here with it to help other persons. My experience in the UK, I have to say, was very good. I think I was spoiled a lot. I was very fortunate because I know everyone's experience is so different, and I know some persons who didn't have a great experience. But my course, my whole department is so supportive. My department is the department that goes, how can we help you? What do you want to do? It's that kind of space. It's not telling you, oh, you have to do this. So it was a very different education culture I went through at the UK, which I think I needed experience. Also coming back to say that I want to work with creative entrepreneurs. I want to bring that supportive nature I learned there in Jamaica. So the experience in the UK was great. Of course, the UK being very diverse, there's always so many activities. But I was in London. So I should say London is very diverse. So there's always something. And as a theater woman, I was at the theater like every month. So I saw different theater at different scale, the large scale theater where, you know, millions were spent on that. And you're like, y'all have all that money? Wow. I remember when I saw Grease set and I saw the sign Riverdale High, and I stared at that sign like, how much did that cost? I couldn't afford that. Nobody in Jamaica can afford that. I mean, all over a sign that is one prop. And then what I loved as well is I love the small, intimate theaters that they have, like, very, like, you know, like when you go to a little bar that you have the singer on stage and you sit in the audience and you have
like
a bar
speakeasy.
At the back. Yes, you have those little theaters like those. And I never experienced that. And I was like, oh, this is so different. So that experience for me, as well as a theater woman, was just so mind blowing. How we know it anywhere you can have theater, but just how they have crafted these different spaces, these different experiences when it comes on to theatre. I absolutely love that. First of all, the UK has the Arts Council that fund the arts. So that was very mind-blowing for me. Because, yes, we have Chase, but it is not like, we don't have a very open funding, like everybody, you apply and you get funding. Funding is so regular there. There's so many funding opportunities. And that, for me, left me mind-blowing, especially when I hear them complaining. And I'm like, what are you complaining about? Like, whenever persons ask me how I do my business and I say I save and do it, in England, they're shocked.
They're like, why?
Because they don't.
What did the government do?
And they're like, well, how did you find that money? I couldn't do it. And I'm like, yeah, you guys don't even understand what you have. What I love is all the pitch competitions they have. I like how the banks are very involved and doing some serious pitch competitions over there as well. There's so many incubator programs as well. Even when I went to the British Library, they have a different place for business center, and they have an incubator at the British Library itself. I found that very fascinating as well. Training happening there for businesses. So there are so many spaces. And even at my university, even if you're not doing my master's, we have enterprise, and enterprise, any student who has a business idea can go to enterprise, and enterprise help you to develop that business idea and train you as well. So when it comes down to training and opportunities, it's really galore. I think the thing that blew my mind as well was the job opportunities. Like, when you just sit on LinkedIn and just see all these job opportunities in theater, you're just like, wow, yes! Like, you can actually find jobs, and you can have a job as a creative, like a regular person. That, for me, was also mind-blowing. And again, they don't even understand what they have, because as a creative, as a theater woman, let me even go more specific. How often am I going to see a theater job in Jamaica? Like, that's really rare, you know.
And then also, because it's so rare, there is also like this element of pre-selection of who would possibly get that opportunity. La 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 la. We're not going there.
We're not. But yes.
But and I had that same experience as well when I went to college. I went to university there to do my master's. It was like there was just like a unit in place between the university that you're going to, the support organization. At the time, it was called Steam House. And then also the different sockets or clusters of creative kind of spaces. Like, everybody just connected together. And it was like an open understanding that the arts is valuable. And like, for me, that is what really sold me in terms of like, Jamaica doesn't understand what it means to really put respect on art's name, you know, and to actually live it.
I don't know if you know this document. It's a document the Arts Council called The Conversation, where they ask the public different questions about the arts in regards to how they value the arts, how they feel about it. And they did that so that they can create different strategies, audience development. That's what they were doing. And I was just in awe of the fact that the government hired a company to take this time, or the Arts Council, which is for the government, took this time to be engaging with the public? You know, do you read? Why don't you read? Why don't you go to the library? Why not going to the theater? What do you like about the theater? Accessibility. Do you think it's accessible? Like, just getting to know what the public needs and wants and why they aren't, so that now other arts organizations can read this and now create strategies to meet what the public needs. I found that article to be simply amazing. I caused one of my assignments I used it for, and I was just in awe over it. But even if you look at where Jamaica is, we aren't having an arts audience development conversation. Do we even understand what that is? That's not a conversation we have.
Or
here at
and
all.
Then like what you just spoke about is just like the strategy of collecting data and analyzing data collection within the creative space. And then that will come back down to how it is that we can go about measuring the value of art itself. And that's a whole different discussion.
Whole different. Which we really need to do.
Yes, because then we are talking about the social outcome that would then enable economic change, then would enable economic kind of value to come in place. But it might be long term. Might be that you might be impacting a community in a way where it is that you are not giving them the fish to eat, but you're teaching them a task in how it is that they can go about in operating long term. Mm-hmm, it's a whole different mm-hmm. thing, but we don't get political. That's not the point.
That's not.
But what I want to hear from you is to just talk to me about the business that you presently are leading. What is it about? What is it called?
So it's called Artribute, and the name is How Art Contributes to Society. That's the
meaning. Hold on. Look here. That name is beautiful. It is beautiful. Continue. Say it one more time.
Artribute. Yes, how art contributes to society. So we are an arts education company where we focus on using drama at this moment, but we're looking at how we're merging it with core curriculum, specifically for high school students. So currently our main service is literature, and how we're using drama to help to educate students in regards to CXC syllabus. But as we go along, we'll be doing other subjects as well and fusing it with drama. And down the line, whenever we can, we want to infuse music and dance, etc. But because drama is my strength, that's what I study. We start there, we build there. And as the company grew, we can take on musicians, we can take on dancers and start creating different methodologies of learning. Because that's what this is about. You know, it's not Jamaica is very traditional in how we learn, but not everyone learns like that. You know, there's so many different learning styles. And one of the things with theater, especially in my dissertation, I looked at just how theater helps with different teaching styles, from the person who learns from looking, watching, from the person who learns from listening, from movement. Theater can even have scent, because scent invokes memory. So all of those little things, we look at how theater does that for our students, to help them to better understand what it is, especially if you're looking at a Shakespeare that's so far removed from them, speaking thou in a whole language that they just don't understand anymore, and how theater bridges that gap. So that's what Artribute is about. We're really about education. We're really about helping our students. And also, I always say we're about supporting our teachers. Because to ask a teacher to meet the learning style of every student is very hard. So as a society and as small businesses or other businesses, how can we create solutions to help to support what our teachers are doing in the classroom? That's what we're about.
Oh, I think that is a very beautiful concept. And then I think this kind of service that you're offering is needed. So one, I was just thinking about the politics. I was doing kind of like a pest analysis in my head And just thinking along the line of like knowing that Jamaica is definitely losing its teachers. We are losing them to supposedly migration. And then also the fact that many people are leaving the space. And then drama, visual arts, performative kind of base educators are lacking. Not them as an individual, but within the space itself, there people have been searching in this September gone, you know, which people ask me like, you know, anybody with teach any form of the performative arts or visual arts spaces. And so like this now seems like it would be like a opportunity to really aid in supporting the educators, as you mentioned as well, and possibly enabling students to be exposed to this specific type of practice, right? If it is that they don't have a drama school teacher and they are passionate in that area, you could be the go-to person, or your organization, our tribute, can contribute.
Oh, come on. Come on.
Contribute to, in some ways, engaging students in being, you know, exposed to that space. And I think it's beautiful. I was saying to myself, like, where have you been?
Slowly developing. Yeah, and it's interesting because I fully didn't understand what I was doing until I went to the UK. The truth is, I was just going off gut. You know, my dad and I said that we had the conversation, and we've just been going off instinct. We're like, this is possible. We think it's possible. It's so logical in our head. And when I would do incubator programs in Jamaica, they would say, you're performing arts business. And I'm like, no. You know, we specialize in education. And they're like, no. Because Jamaica doesn't understand that arts education is an actual market. We don't understand that here. It's when I went to England and I started to talk to my lecturers in my master's course. And they're like, oh, no, Ebony, you are, because over there it's common. It's very common, that market. So they're like, no, you're in arts education. You're in two markets. You know, you're over the arts, you're over education, but you're merging both. And that's what your business is. And then I went, uh-huh. And then they started showing me, I know, right? Like an aha moment. And then they started showing me what people doing, like drama and science. And I'm like, what? Drama and maths. And I'm like, wait, I'm having a brain freeze. I mean, this thing is happening worldwide like this. And they're like, yes, Ebony. And I felt, I can be honest, I felt for the first time seen. I didn't feel crazy. I didn't feel, because I felt like, I knew this was possible. I know somewhere out there it is possible, but I just haven't seen it fully in my eyes. And the UK was a space where I realized, oh my God, I am actually on the right path. This is possible. This is happening. This is it. And it motivated me even more. And I was like, oh no, we're stepping it even further. Oh, we're doing this now. Oh, we're doing that now. Even more fearless.
I'm mind blown. Wait there. I'm just getting like a full flesh of everything. Are you saying that?
Yes, you're mind blown. I see.
I'm just wondering the process. Is it that you would be engaging with the educators that might be core drama-based kind of lecturers or educators within a school space to partner with already specialize or the other subject matter kind of teaching, and then both of them could join forces in bouncing ideas off each other, or it is that you would be going in to train or to support educators in understanding that process that you're going through, or you would be the one that would be offering the service.
So you're asking me my PhD research question.
I'm asking you a PhD research question for real?
You're asking me my PhD research question, literally. That's what you're asking me right now. So we want to do a mixture of things. We want to create the service, Because, okay, so you have theater in education and you have drama in education. Right now, we're a theater in education, so where we produce a production and we hand it to them. Now, drama in education we can work with the teachers and say, okay, let's come together. It can be in class. It can be that we create a product that they would use in class, etc. So as the business grows, the business wants to see how we can do a little bit of everything, but have them under different services. So you choose which service is best for you. But of course, theater in education is where we start and definitely where we will always want to continue as we add other things to the equation. But you're asking me my PhD question. That's what you do.
At first, I felt like it would have been just like you offering a service and being a core kind of space that would enable drama-based creativity to take place within institution. But then now I'm seeing that it could go wider. And so when you just fleshed and broke down everything, I was like, what is happening?
That's what England did for me. That's when I realized, I was like, because even in England, because I was at students only, then I realized there are companies in England who are even working with the teachers themselves, like teacher training workshop. And I was like, oh, y'all working with teachers too? I didn't think. And one of my company members, one of the founding, or should I say the earliest members in the company, was saying it to me, like, you know, we could work with teachers. And I was like, teachers? And when I saw it in England, I went,
oh.
I tell you, I needed that experience in England. I have to say, it really helped me as an entrepreneur and as a visionary to just be bold and to trust my gut and to know that I wasn't wrong from day one. This is possible. Just keep going, just keep creating and figuring out. And well, let me not say figure out, because we have started, we have done the research of our first method. And now we are in development of fine-tuning what that method is. And as we fine-tune that method, then we start researching the second one. Because, you know, in business, that's cycle, you never stop R&D. You never stop research and develop. The moment you stop is the moment your business model does going flop. So that's what I said, you know, you're asking the PhD question, because as I do my PhD as well, I'm exploring even more. What can we do, where we're going with it, and which will be a whole new service in itself now to bring back to Jamaica. And of course, all this is development, not just education development, but development in the CCI. Because we need new services for employment. The bigger attribute gets, the more people we employ, whether creatives, whether teachers, etc. So these things are, and that's why I'm always, even though I'm an entrepreneur, I always support persons like, get out there, be an entrepreneur, because through entrepreneurship is how every single industry grows.
So what would you say to yourself 5 years ago as an entrepreneur?
Oh, 5 years ago, I would have said I just started. What I would have said to myself back then was, you go, girl. It's not too late. You know, back then I thought I was young. I thought I was too young. And I was, persons always ask the female, like, how do you feel as a female entrepreneur? Wasn't as much a gender for me. Yes, gender came into it, but it was really youth. And I thought back then I was too young. And what I've said to my younger self is, you go, girl. You did that. I am so proud of you. That's what I would say to my younger self. But I pushed through and I did it.
Give me a pat. Give yourself a pat on your shoulder. Good job. But I'm gonna say, like, this was very enlightening, this session, this overall session, and just for you to share your process of building out your business, and even know how it is that you have done the research and now you're taking strides into start, you know, communicating with possibly your audience. Let's see. But I feel so hopeful, and I'm just so ecstatic about this type of change that it's going to bring, you know? And
Thank you.
Just gonna say, like, bless you. Bless you. And I wish you the best. Come on now.
Thank you.
Come on.
And I also want to say to you too, Renee, as well, you know, thank you for coming back to Jamaica after leaving and being a lecturer at Edna Manley. You know, bringing back the knowledge, that's so important. Sometimes we underestimate those things. The brain drain is real. And I think that you just being at Edna Manley is so amazing for the new generation coming up and passing on that knowledge that you gain. I think you're amazing to be doing that.
I'm going to tell you, it's one of the most fulfilling spaces I've ever been in to be an educator. I also said in that same year, like, I'm going to go ahead and do my master's. No clue of where the money's coming from. But I applied to the institutions every year, and I applied to scholarships every year, and that's what it is. And I think, like, in terms of the commonality, even when I've connected with you, is that one thing about us, based on what I'm seeing, is that, and feeling, is that we're trying.
Yeah, actually, I want you to say it again, Renee, when you said you applied to many places, many times, people don't, the trying, yes. The trying, Renee, is so important. People think it's a one time and stop. No, try again. I would also wanted to say, because I came home and I said this about you to my dad. I said, Dad, I just saw Renee in her as first time as an educator in a space. And she is such a supportive and kind educator to her students. And I love and appreciate that. Yeah, let me tell you, because in Jamaica, sometimes we're so hard. And, you know, I went to England and saw the support. And I always say, you know, I want to see that kind of support. And I remember you said to a student, don't beat up yourself. Everything is about learning. And when you said that, Renee, I was like, yes, this is what Jamaica needs. Educators like these. And I just wanted to say that to you, like, just thank you for being you and for being here.
Walters, bless you. You are a wonderful individual. Bless you, and thank you for being here in this session.
Thank you for having me. Bye.
I hope you've enjoyed this session. Follow me on Instagram at Renee Kitson for more inspiration. Remember that you are enough and that only you can be you.
Just go and own up your UNS now. Boom, bang, bang.